Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
You know, the low end plans were hitting like $400 or $500 a month with like basic coverage. And I was like, oh my God, like that's a lot of money. I'm a freelancer. I don't have benefits, so I have to pay my own health insurance. But also, you know, at the same time, I have to pay rent, I have to get food, and I'm, you know, in grad school, I have school loans. So the expenses were quite adding up. And it's like, well, how do I do this and still be a healthy type 1 diabetic and be able to get my insulin to keep me alive? And that's what kind of led me to do the research of like, well, how do other people do it? What if people can't afford their medicine? Like, do they die? You know?
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. This is your host, Lauren Bongiorno, and today we are talking about a really important topic with our guest, Scott Ruderman. I met Scott years ago and personally just admired him so much for his talent, for his story, for all the things that he's working on that I'm excited to share with you today. Scott was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in 2009, and he's an award-winning filmmaker who has worked on film projects for Netflix, Hulu, A&E Originals, and HBO. In this episode, we talk about the insulin crisis in America, the making of the Pay or Die film, how him and director Rachel Dreier got actress and comedian Sarah Silverman to produce the film, and Civica Rx's recent announcement to bring $30 insulin to the market by 2024. This is a really important conversation for us to be having as a community and raising awareness on, so I hope you enjoy, share it, and let me know how you liked it. Here we go. Scott, oh my goodness. I feel like this has been a long time coming. I'm so glad you're coming on the podcast. And I want to start by going back a little bit to set the scene. So I watched the trailer that you released for the Pay or Die film on Instagram, actually just yesterday. I think you just released it this week. And my heart was, I mean, it was just shattering. And I'm so excited for more people to hear about the Pay or Die film and talk about it with you today. But background. So you hold a Master of Fine Arts degree in social documentary film. Where did your drive for social impact film come from?
Lauren, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Kind of experience in filmmaking definitely started like right before I went, did my master's. And, you know, I really came into the industry not really with a drive to be an activist or, you know, kind of leading social impact films. I really like the idea of telling, you know, real stories. And within real stories, there's always a message that needs to be delivered. Mm-hmm. Or a message that, you know, kind of is sent through behind a good story. And I think, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, the social impact part of it doesn't come to you until an issue directly affects you. And being kind of a victim of the insulin crisis and a filmmaker at the same time, I felt as though it was my duty that I have a resource that I could do something to help voice others. And that's kind of where Pay or Die, originally the idea kind of started forming in my mind as a filmmaker.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned how it personally has affected you. And I want to talk more about that. But if we can go back also to your diagnosis, I heard somewhere that you had kind of a crazy diagnosis story in college. And, you know, we believe strongly in our community at Risely Health and believe in that if we share our stories, your transformation can inspire others. Your sharing your story of your diagnosis can help other people open up about their diagnosis story and create that ripple effect. So can you tell us more about when you were diagnosed, what that was like, what you remember? I know you were young.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed, I was 19 years old. I was a freshman in college, and I was studying in Boston. And, you know, my diagnosis story, it happens quick, but like quick over 2 weeks. I didn't really know what was going on. I was very thirsty, you know, going to the bathroom a lot. And I just thought, hey, you know, I'm changing. I'm in college. I'm going out more, you know, new lifestyle, new routine, new schedule. And then the serious symptoms started to come, like where I noticed my eyes were getting a little, you know, kind of, it wasn't like I was hard to see, but like fuzzy where I was rubbing them. And then eventually, I think one morning I woke up. It was in the morning. I woke up and I looked at my roommate and I said, hey man, I cannot feel my legs. They feel like beanbags, like they fell asleep. And, this is odd. So I went to the school infirmary and, as soon as I walked in and explained my symptoms to the school nurse, she made a comment and said, oh, it sounds like you have diabetes, but then it was like, oh, I'm sure you're fine. The first thing she did was did a finger prick test with me, left the room, and then came back a little while later and said, so I thought the meter was broken because it wasn't able to read. It just kept saying hi. And when I tested mine, it actually read my blood sugar. So I think your blood sugars are out of the normal range. So you should go to the hospital and give this note to the emergency room. And they put me in a cab. I went there and boom, before you knew it, I was in a hospital bed, and I had four or five doctors over me asking me a lot of questions. And that's where it started. I was there for about a week. They had to slowly bring me down. I was diagnosed with somewhere between 900 and 1,000, and it was scary, and my life changed.
Your life changed. And as a 19-year-old, you're also in this time where you're independent, and it's not necessarily like your parents are there to guide you and take care of you. And so going into this, you know, next phase of your life, I'm sure you had things that you knew were going to happen and what was going to change from what the doctors told you. But what didn't they prep you for? Like, what was the conversation around the financials of the financial burden that diabetes may be on your life? And was there support there? Like, what was that like?
So this is the interesting aspect. You know, when I was 19, I wasn't, you know, still on my parents' health insurance. You know, I was in school. So the financial aspect didn't really surface, you know, the harsh aspects of it didn't surface right away. But I didn't know that, you know, it was going to be a little bit more expensive because I needed to go to the pharmacy and I had a copay, and, you know, I needed insulin and I would have to pay for that, and, you know, or my family would have to pay for it, but I would still be involved in the financial part of it, you know. But yeah, my life changed. You know, interestingly enough, the school called me and said, do you want to take the semester off? And I said, no. And next week I was back in class. And it was tough. But I was in a very strong city, Boston, with, a lot of medical students. And, you know, I wasn't really afraid to tell people. And I have close friends of mine that when they were first diagnosed, they were really afraid to tell people. And I always thought, the more I can tell, the safer I am. People know that I have this. I really didn't care about the stigma at that time. And my school did a really nice thing where they found other type ones that went to the same school as I did, and created kind of like a little get together. And I met one of my best friends there, still to this day, who is a type one. So, and he was older than me. He is older than me. He's, you know, was 2 years older than me, and kind of showed me the ropes. We went out, you know, he said I could drink and I could be a normal student and do all the fun college thing, you know, a new freshman in college would do. And it was a bit of a learning curve, but I was young and didn't want diabetes to rob me of my freshman year in college or my college years.
Right. You're focused on, I want to be a college kid. I want to hang out. I want to do things with my friends. I want to stay up late. I want to drink. I want to do all this. I just don't want diabetes to get in the way.
Correct.
And it's so interesting that you say that, because I think that that was very much my experience too. And, you know, we're here today to talk about the insulin crisis and accessibility and all of these important things. And I think this is a great way to set it up, that there are people that from the start, you know, are privileged enough to be able to, the only thing they have to worry about with diabetes is, how can I just be normal? And then there's this whole other group of people, a large percentage, that it's that they're worrying about, but also the basic needs of, how am I going to afford to pay for my insulin, and how am I going to pay for this CGM that they're telling me is, you know, life-changing, and that it's so much better than finger pricks and can alert me if I drop low in the middle of the night and save my life. So I heard somewhere, and I think this is something, a quote of yours that's been circulating in a few different places, but you had said, most of my adult life has been defined by one inescapable question: how can I make enough money as a filmmaker to afford the insulin I need to stay alive? So when did you first realize, I guess, the burden that diabetes was financially for you? Was that when you were off your parents' healthcare plan? Like, what was that like?
Yeah. So when I came off of my parents' healthcare plan and started looking into plans for myself, I always knew healthcare, you know, insurance plans were going to be around, you know, $200 to $300 a month. But then as soon as I started putting in the medicines I take, that I need insulin, all of a sudden the low end plans were hitting like $400 or $500 a month with like basic coverage. And I was like, oh my God, like, that's a lot of money. I'm a freelancer. I don't have benefits, so I have to pay my own health insurance. But also, you know, at the same time, I have to pay rent, I have to get food, and I'm, you know, in grad school, I have school loans. So the expenses were quite adding up. And it's like, well, how do I do this and still be a healthy type 1 diabetic and be able to get my insulin to keep me alive? And that's what kind of led me to do the research of like, well, how do other people do it? What if people can't afford their medicine? Like, do they die? You know? Mm-hmm. And right away, the research I did, I was shocked that people were rationing insulin because they couldn't afford it and there was no other option for them. Given that they even had normal jobs that weren't freelance jobs, they were working normal jobs, but they made a little too much money to qualify for subsidies, but didn't make enough money to cover their insulin. And that's a lot of people. That's, you know, and that's what kind of like lit the fire of like, okay, I want to research more of this. And maybe there's something I could do about it by making a film.
That's incredible. And you took something that was, you know, something you were struggling with alone and realizing that it was impacting so many other people and it was scaling, and you wanted to tell that story and have more people know. And thank God there's so much more awareness of it now. But, you know, I think about this often. I talk about this with my team a lot, that at Risley, what we do is we're empowering people with diabetes, right? To take ownership over their outcomes and to feel good and to manage their blood sugars and get more control so it can improve their relationships and their mood and their energy and all these other factors. But like I alluded to earlier, it's, you can't focus on those things unless you don't have, unless you have the bare minimum, which is insulin, right? And not have to ration it or even ration test strips or things like that. So how does or did the financial burden impact your relationship to type 1 diabetes, if anything? And how, I guess, have you shifted this relationship over time?
Great question. I think in the beginning, it was a combination of what I could get for the month and also getting samples from my endocrinologist. And being fortunate enough that every time I went, I was able to get a sample or two samples that could get me, you know, a few weeks out of the month. And then, you know, having some leftover insulin from the past month that would get me into the next month. I wouldn't really consider that as rationing because I always made sure I had enough. What I didn't have, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, is reserve insulin. And I think reserve insulin in its own is something that's also very scary because, you know, with insurance, you go and you only get a month's supply. Well, What if a natural catastrophe happens? What if your mm-hmm. pen falls out of your pocket when you're on the subway? You know, that's where the reality, I think, happens too for a lot of people. But, you know, I've had bad months and I've had great months. One of the awesome things is that my partner, Rachel, who's also directing the film with me, and you know, we met in the field. She's a producer director, and I was a cameraman on a show, and we met, and I told her about this, and she said, you should come to Canada with me to, you know, her family is half Canadian, half Australian. We went to Canada, and that's where kind of, I think, the tipping point for me and Rachel to actually now make a film happened was when I was able to go to Canada and see how easy it was to get insulin at a very affordable out-of-pocket rate without Canadian health insurance was what really kind of said, wow, you know, this is like we're right next to America. We're shoulder to shoulder with America, and you can get it so cheap here. This is crazy, disgusting. And that's what led to it. But, you know, I have gotten insulin from Canada. I have also gotten insulin from Australia. You know, pre-COVID, I was in Australia with Rachel and her doctor gave me a prescription and I got, you know, a year's supply of insulin for $140. Wow. And I'm talking about 50 Lantus pens and 10 packs of, you know, Nova Rapid cartridges. And, you know, quickly doing the out-of-pocket math on a calculator for the U.S. prices, it was nearly like $30,000.
Oh my gosh.
So,
just not, it's not acceptable. Like,
no.
I even heard a statistic the other day that was 120,000 or 125,000 patients die every year because they aren't taking their medication just in general. And mm-hmm. then 2/3 of the time they don't take it because they can't afford it. So we're here talking about insulin, but this is also just like a US problem. And you going to Canada and seeing that difference is what people do on a regular basis to be able to afford insulin for themselves. And just think about too, Scott, like I know that you film some people and we're going to talk about the documentary in a moment, but you filmed people where there's multiple people with type 1 diabetes in the household. So that's not only like, yeah, one vial for a month or two vials for a month. It might be 4 vials for a month or 5 vials for a month.
Yeah. And you know, I didn't really understand what the term medical refugee meant until I went to Canada. And I'm not talking about just type ones. I'm talking about all types of medication. And, you know, drug pricing in America is the culprit of the unjust healthcare system, you know. And I think lately, insulin prices have been the culprit of drug pricing. It's been the poster child of drug pricing because without insulin, you're dead within a matter of a few days. So, you know, Pay or Die, of course, is a film that is following, you know, people struggling to access their insulin and tragic stories that have revolve around rationing insulin. But at the same time, there's a deeper, broader message about the American healthcare system and how many, many people can relate to the drug pricing issue here in the States and why it needs to change and possibly how it could change.
Yeah. And, you know, for those of you listening too, who don't know or who aren't familiar, so since 2008, 3 of the top insulin manufacturers have raised the list price 10 times. And I mean, like, there's clearly a regulated monopoly for this insulin that we need to live as type ones and even some type twos. But from the work that you've done in the film and for all the research, you know, over the years and how much has went into this, what do you see as the most viable solution for addressing this crisis of accessibility and, yeah, everything that's going on in this country?
You know, sadly, there's not going to just be one solution. It's going to take many solutions and it's going to take a lot of people. And it could take longer and then just, you know, an overnight change. I think, you know, it's not just, I think when I first started Pay or Die, immediately you know, I kind of was like, whoa, like this is these pharmaceutical companies. This is crazy. How do they get away with this? But when you dig deeper into the research and start figuring out all the players involved, it's a lot of different players involved in this, and it's very complicated. The Minnesota state representative that was dealing with Nicole's case about Alec he made it, he said to me, he said, look at the American healthcare system as one big tangled knot. And every time someone tries to do something, that knot just gets tighter. So what that has done is it kind of scares a lot of people away from trying to, you know, try to find a solution within this complex healthcare system. And I think today, a lot of people want to do something about it. And it's not just one side, it's bipartisan. People from both sides of the table are trying to figure out solutions to it, but it's archaic and there's a lot of strings attached to a lot of different people. So, you know, I think drug pricing is the culprit of the healthcare system. So I think, you know, starting with drug pricing in America, trying to make more affordable prices on drugs, not just insulin, you know, that's a good start. And it can't just be, you know, in order for insulin to go down, other drug prices are going to have to go down. So, you know, the thing about insulin, like I said before, it's the poster child because it's one of those medications that you cannot live with, that you know, without it, you're dead. So I think that's kind of the urgency behind this issue. So I think insulin is one part of it. You know, it goes into the rebate system, you know, pharmaceutical benefit managers, insurance companies, politicians, private business. And that's one of the interesting things that the film, you know, will kind of, you know, get into a little bit. But it's also important to understand that this film really follows, you know, Pear Dye really follows the human character stories, because at the end of the day, that's where most people are going to relate and have more sympathy and familiarity with that. Would they would actually get up and want to extend the voice of the film to do something. And, you know, it's going to take masses for change to happen, as it usually does.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you said something there that reminded me of how I fell in love with you and Rachel. I really did. It was like a moment where I was like, oh, I just love them both. And last year you held a Pay or Die talk, meet and greet, and something either you or Rachel said really hit me. And I remember it clear as day. You said, our goal isn't to point fingers at pharmaceuticals. It's to tell the stories of people's hardships, because that is what will make the most impact. And that was really powerful, because I think our natural inclination is when we get angry about something, and when I say we, it's just, you know, the universal we want to just point fingers at the biggest thing that we can see, right? Like the big companies, pharmaceuticals, like just put all our anger there instead of actually putting it towards more creative solutions, which I actually see is what you're doing, which is let's tell about the problem and get more people to understand by creating this documentary. So I know the documentary follows three different stories of families, and you mentioned Alex Smith. And for those of who aren't familiar, could you give a little bit of insight into maybe just one of the families, one of the stories of, you know, who you shot along the way?
Absolutely. So one of our leading stories is about Alex Smith, who was living in Minnesota. You know, he educated and was working at a restaurant as a restaurant manager in Richfield, Minnesota, and making, you know, a decent income. I believe it was around $40,000 for the year. And, you know, he turned 26 and kind of went off his parents' health insurance and needed to cover his own, and he couldn't make the $1,300 a month payment to get him to the next month, and he started rationing his insulin, and before you know it, he went into DKA and he was found dead in his apartment. And since then, his mother Nicole has really done a lot of groundwork to fight on the state level for access to emergency insulin in Minnesota, and she has gotten that passed, and it was quite an uphill battle over many years. And what that means is if someone is in need of insulin, they can enroll into this program and get access to emergency insulin if they were struggling to get by for a month. And when it was passed, I believe, you know, within the first few months, over 600 people have used it. So she's done a lot of work in Minnesota. Unfortunately, a major pharmaceutical company has sued the bill And right now that's out of her control. But the goal is that, you know, unfortunately, access to emergency insulin is only in a few states. The goal would be to make that a federally blanket across the United States of anyone who needs access to insulin should be able to, you know, enroll in some, be able to get into a program that allows them to get emergency insulin. I mean, there's been so many cases where people have, don't have reserve insulin or couldn't afford it and go to the pharmacy. It's like 8 o'clock at night and they're like, well, we need your doctor to call and your endocrinologist is home or on vacation and you're stuck at the pharmacy for 2 hours waiting for, you know, a new prescription to come through because it's either ended or expired or you need an override or they need to contact insurance. And it doesn't matter how much money or little money you have. Everyone at some point, I believe, has had these issues. Unfortunately, in America, pharmacies are allowed to let you leave the pharmacy without your medication, unlike other countries where they'll have to do everything in their power to give you something so you don't leave. Because with insulin, you leave without insulin, you're dead, you know? You know, following Nicole over the last few years is, you know, she is such an inspiring mother for the work she has done to make sure this doesn't happen to other mothers, other type ones, starting in Minnesota. But her story has really, I think, has shaken up the country. I mean, you know, it's a lot of people know about the Alex Smith story, and it's tragedy what has happened to him, and what Nicole has had to go through over the years trying to make sure this doesn't happen to anyone else. And filming that has been really hard being a type one, but also at the same thing, it's been very inspiring knowing that someone is really trying to make change in this country.
She sounds so incredible. And that's what I was going to ask you too. As you were talking, I'm thinking, like, I'm such a huge empath. Like, I don't know if I could do what you did for, I mean, how many years have you been working on this project first? And then second, how did you do it? Like, was it emotionally difficult for you? Were there times where you were just like feeling drained at the end of the day, not just because of the hours of filming, but just because of the mental and emotional toll?
Absolutely. So we started filming end of 2018. The majority of filming has been over 2019 and 2020. And you know, being a type one, I get this question a lot is, you know, what is it like being behind the camera knowing that, you know, you're not far from that? And the truth is, I am not far from that. I mean, a bad month can put me in a dicey situation when it comes to getting my insulin. And it does give me the chills. A lot of tears have happened behind the camera. And knowing, you know, kind of what they're going through because I'm a type one and I know the symptoms is really, it's hard. And there have been times where it's like, okay, I need to put down the camera and help if I can. And, but then that kind of, you know, that's the hard thing. You know, a lot of people ask me that too. If you're in a position to help, would you put down the camera and help? And I think one of the hardest things about being a documentary filmmaker is what is your duty is to make a film. And, you know, sometimes you can't put down the camera because it is so intense, and that's just going to create a louder voice at the end of the day. You know, if I was to put down the camera and kind of be there for everyone, a film wouldn't be made. And the way I look at it is if I can get through it, and, you know, help make this film so it could create a louder voice, and get into the living rooms of people all over the country, it would be more powerful than just me trying personally to help when I can help. So,
right. You're playing the long game.
Yes, playing the long game. But no, there's been times where I've absolutely had to put down the camera and take a breather for myself. And, you know, at the end of the day, going back, you know, and talking to Rachel of like, you know, how do we make sure this doesn't happen to me? We live it every day.
Yeah, no, of course. And it's almost like you have to compartmentalize. It sounds a little bit, it sounds like you have to kind of take yourself out of being in that position and stay in the role of filmmaker. And I mean, with Rachel, like when, with as partners with her, like how has that been on your relationship where I'm sure your emotions are all tangled of, you know, you getting really maybe triggered by something? Does she hold more of that space? Is she affected by it as well? What's that like?
I think it's a different shock factor for her. You know, I think being, you know, her being from Australia and Canada, being an international foreigner, you know, in their countries, insulin is affordable in Australia and Canada. And everyone kind of knows that, you know, drug prices are more expensive here, but kind of seeing it on a firsthand and is really shocking and scary, right? It's very scary. Mm-hmm. Because in Australia and Canada, you know, things like this wouldn't happen at the level it's happening here in the United States. So, you know, she deals with her own struggles going through this, you know, constantly comparing, you know, like we need to move, we should leave, you know. But at the same time, you know, having the support, the mental support of being able to be there with someone who is on board with the film, but not directly affected being a type one has been a huge resource, you know, and for her as well as, you know, being a director on the film, it's also been a learning curve for her of not being a type one, but having me as a type one to help explain things to her and she has to live with it, you know, every day. Mm-hmm. She also, you know, is directly, you know, emotionally tied to it as well.
You guys sound like you make an awesome team, and you bring up a good point as well, Scott, by saying, you know, Rachel says, why don't we just leave? Why don't we just move? And I think that could be the same for people who are thinking, well, if you, you know, don't have great insurance or if you're a filmmaker, why don't you just choose another job? But I think what I'm hearing here, and I think what the important message is that we shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to, right? This should just be something that in the United States, people with diabetes are supported by the government and given what was patented, I believe with a dollar, right? It was a dollar when Sir Banting, am I pronouncing his last name correctly? He made it a dollar because he wanted it to be accessible to everybody. And here it is now, a bottle's close to $300 and it's just unacceptable. So I'm really curious. I'm dying to ask you what your opinions are on the recent updates of Civica RX. So I'm sure, you know, you saw everything that was announced very recently that this nonprofit company, they launched in 2018 for anybody who doesn't know. And in 2024, they just announced that they aim to manufacture and distribute biosimilar rapid acting and long acting insulin for no more than $30 per vial and $55 per box of 5 pens. And here's the kicker, regardless of insurance status. So I think that's the piece that has been hard on a lot of people. It's like, okay, capping it at $30, $35 if you have insurance, like that's not the issue. It's for the uninsured too. So what are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think every step to trying to change is progress, no matter how big or little the change is. You know, 2024 is it's not too far away, but there's a lot can happen between now and then. So I am very curious to see what does evolve over the next year or two. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of push for this. And unfortunately, things haven't changed. But the fact that it is being discussed, the bigger tables now is huge. And I do think we will eventually see some better change. But again, my immediate instinct is what are the barriers of entry to being able to do something like this? And one of the interesting things in Pay or Die is that we get into the biohacking space of alternative affordable insulin. And you know, because breaking down the simplicity of making insulin and getting it at an affordable price, but also getting it approved by the FDA and then all the other barriers of entry, because a lot of these pharmaceutical companies do, and insurance companies, they do hold a lot of power with medications that enter into the market. So I'm curious of how that's going to work. And, you know, are they going to be able to stick to their word with that? You know, you look at Sanofi, which is a French pharmaceutical company. They own, 70 patents on Lantus, you know, which covers them for 40 years. And that one insulin alone makes them millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, having someone else coming into the space, I'm sure doesn't, it's not that easy, you know? So I, like I said, going back to the barriers of entry in this space, I'm curious to know what can actually happen. And if this is the case, does this mean that it becomes more of an open area for other manufacturers to start creating insulin or silo insulin breweries in different states so people can make insulin on the small scale and sell it to it at an affordable price? Wouldn't that be amazing? Again, it's all very complex. I have hope, but at the same time, you know, money, greed, power, politics, there's a lot of stakes. So I'm very curious to see what could happen. And we hope Pay or Die could be part of, you know, that push for something more positive to happen. You know, as filmmakers, our goal is to make the world a better place. And hopefully by doing that, by doing this, we could make the world a better place and make the United States a better place for people that are struggling to afford insulin or any medication they can't afford. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, drug pricing is a huge hot topic right now. And I think a lot of people are paying attention to it. So I'm hopeful we'll get there soon.
Yeah. I mean, I've just been so impressed watching this journey. And it's not like you're creating, you know, a film that 10 people are going to see. Like, this is going to make an impact. And I mean, when I saw, I think it was last month, you and the Hollywood Reporter both announced that Sarah Silverman would be producing the documentary. Like, that was huge. So not to bury the lead there, but I'm like, I'm dying to know. I need Scott to give me the lowdown. So like, what can you tell us about bringing her on board? I know she's like a passionate advocate for healthcare reform and is very vocal about that. And yeah, I just want to hear, give us the deets.
Yeah. So Sarah Silverman, one of our EPs, you know, was able to get the materials in front of her and her team, and they responded positively about it. And when we got on that first meeting, you know, Sarah was awesome. Her passion for healthcare was very inspiring. And, you know, you could see the honesty within her wanting to really do something to make healthcare, you know, healthcare reform in this country better for the greater. And she and her manager had a comment that said, anyone who watches the teaser for your guys' film and doesn't do anything doesn't have a soul. Mm. And, you know, that right there was kind of like, wow, like, you know, what we're making is really touching people and wanting people to step up and you know, help us surface the voice of this issue. So yeah, bringing Sarah has been amazing, and she's very excited and passionate behind the project. And we're so happy and grateful to have her on board as an executive producer.
Congratulations. That's amazing. She sounds incredible. And to have her on your team for this, I think it's going to go so far and make such a big impact. It sounds really aligned. Everybody you have on board, it sounds like it's the base connection of you're connected emotionally to this, to the bigger problems, to wanting to make an impact. And I think that's what it takes too for what you're doing, because like you said, this isn't going to happen overnight. It's not a film that's going to be made overnight either. And so you have to be all in. And so this is going to show. I mean, if anybody listening has not seen the trailer yet, go to the Pay or Die film on Instagram and watch it. Like I said earlier, I watched it 3 times and I was just, I was almost affected by for the rest of the night last night, because I was like, you can't turn away from this. You just can't. So I guess, you know, Scott, what for people who are wanting to support, who are outraged by this, who are hearing you speak and saying, yes, 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 like, where would you send them? How can they support Pay or Die? How can they support creating more awareness around the insulin crisis in general, where would you send them?
Absolutely. I think for anyone that wants to support the film, we do have a GoFundMe page, you know, where you can donate, and, you know, every dollar counts. Every dollar makes a difference for us to getting this film closer to coming out. Our goal is to have it, you know, done by the end of the year, and we want to stay on track. We just brought on an amazing, you know, editor who's been nominated for an Oscar, and we have a great post team, and a lot of people are responding to the material and really thinks this is going to be a huge film. So our goal is to get this film out. It's a very appropriate and important time right now for a film like this. It's a film that I think America needs right now. So your support, come go to our GoFundMe page, make a donation that suits you, and I promise you it will go a long way. For those that, you know, maybe can't make a donation but want to share it, our website, www.payerfilm.com, has a lot of resources. You can learn more about the team. You could watch the most recent teaser, and we have links to resources as well. And Facebook, Instagram, follow us, repost, share. All of that helps. You know, the more people that we can get this in front of, the more support we get. And, you know, one of the things, this is not a film just for type 1 diabetics. This is a film, like I said, for America, for anyone that, you know, is struggling with our current healthcare system, for anyone that understands that America needs healthcare reform, for anyone that is struggling to afford medication for themselves, a loved one, or watching their friends struggle to afford, whether it's cancer medication, whether it's inhalers, whether it is insulin, and realizes it's expensive, you know, that shouldn't be the case. You know, help us get this out there, because the faster we can get this film out, the more people it will go to, and hopefully we can make whatever change we can, and going back to just making the world a better place. So thank you very much.
Yes. And we'll put this all in the show note description so you can find all these links to support. It really, any kind of action that you can take will go a long way. And Scott, two more last questions for you. First, do you have a timeline of when the documentary is going to be released?
So in terms of like a release date, no, but an idea of when, we are trying to have the film ready for the festival circuit, you know, which is going to be early next year. So we are trying to wrap up the edit by fall of this year. And hopefully we will, you know, we'll be in the festival circuit. And that's also a great opportunity for people. If there's a festival, if playing at a festival nearby them, they can go and visit, watch it and see it. But that's kind of our timeline right now, is to have it done by the end of the year.
Incredible. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that. And before you go, one question that we ask every guest that I would love for you to answer is, you know, at Risley, we believe in reclaiming our rise. And so the rise is often associated with CGM arrows and high blood sugars, but to reclaim the rise means to take back the power that diabetes has on us, to reclaim the energy or mood or impact or direction of our lives, whatever that will be. And so in a succinct, you know, two or three sentences, how do you reclaim your rise every day?
You know, as a filmmaker, waking up in the morning, knowing that I'm making a film that could impact the lives of those struggling is what gets me up and gets me out of bed. You know, this is not a film for me. This is a film for everyone struggling. And knowing that I could be a leader for them, a voice for them, I guess is really the real purpose behind what I do and why I do it.
Whew. Thank you so much, Scott. This has been amazing talking with you. For everybody listening, go follow Scott, go support Pay or Die Film, and let us know how you enjoyed the podcast. Please rate and review it and subscribe to help support the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. And we will see you next time. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, Lauren.